John Tamere joins us too. Thanks for your time, John. Hoki maira e hoa.
Kia ora.
Hey, thanks. The Waitangi Tribunal and summons for the minister, it's playing out in the High Court today. John, you know your way around a courtroom. What are you making of this challenge? And do you think it's like a legal protest? We can't just stand by and watch everything that we hold dear get kicked to touch. So is this another way of ensuring that Māori perspectives are centre stage?
Oh, look, I think what you see is a government by dictatorship. Like, if it doesn't like anything, it threatens you and it stands over you. It says, you know, you've got no right to bring me before the law because I'm above the law. Now, you can't. Governments are not above the law. Ministers are not above the law. And if a minister wants to take away a significant statutory license, that is actually showing significant opportunity for working for Māori and for children, which is at the bottom of it all. It's babies and their families that count, not the type of race-based engineering that this present government's up to, particularly with New Zealand First and the Act. And so the problem we have is that Seymour and his mates think that because they come from an extraordinarily well-funded, white, privileged, supremacist background, that they're above the law. Well, by and large, they can pay for the best lawyers, and they normally are, because there's not one law for all, as they argue. There's one law for very well-off people that can fund some significant lawyers to play the game out and grind others down, exhaust them and win. So they're used to having their way. They're not used to being summoned before a tribunal or a court to justify what they're doing. And so the High Court case is to attack the jurisdiction of another court or another tribunal called the Waitangi Tribunal that has summons. Well, it's got the right of summons, but it's asked the minister to attend and account for her wanting to do away with Section 7AA, which is the poster piece that holds together Māori rights and entitlements to look after their own whakapapa. Nothing bizarre in that. But it just gives you another insight into the thinking of the DNA of this mob.
I spoke with Claudette earlier today. Of course, on Friday, the list of those who were looking for fast-track considerations were published, and the Ombudsman upheld a complaint by Greenpeace about the submission process and the stakeholders that have been informed about fast-track proposals. And there are many Māori organisations on there, and I'm not sure that they all wanted to be, but they're listed, a significant list: Marairoa, Marutuahu, Manga Haruru, Ngā Maunga, the list goes on, John. So when we look at the fast-track process before a panel and then get the nod to go through, even though there might be significant public opposition, I'm wondering about who might be a watchdog against corruption. You're familiar with ICAC in Australia, the Independent Commission Against Corruption. It operates in New South Wales. Do we need something similar like that here?
You do. Look, there's all sorts of laws around graft, right? Now, graft leads to overt corruption, but it's the deal's done on the way to full corruption, right? So I'll donate this or I'll give this to you, but if you can get somewhere that can support me where my business is going, nod, nod, wink, wink. That's corruption. That's graft, right? In the old days, it used to be as small as, I'll shout you to the All Blacks and we'll get on the juice and everything else, and you're the you're one of the tender purchasing staff at the local authority or in government, right? And just look, let's look the other way and just put my tender up front, or let me know what I need to bid at. You with me? That's graft. Well, and people go, oh no, that's a normal way of doing business. It is not. With the fast track, I'm involved in one group that is named there. We shouldn't be on it. We don't want fast track. We want the right track. Fast track simply allows fossil fuel people to mine the residue of it instead of taking their investments and funding new energy, whether it's solar, whether it's hydro, whether whatever it is, geothermal. The fact of the matter is this government is now giving them the right and the entitlement to continue to mine and use significant matter from coal to oil all the way through that will continue to do major damage environmentally, and all the evidence is in on that. So the next question you've got to ask yourself is, why are they doing that when all the evidence says, from even on their tobacco, all the evidence said, don't do what you're doing around tobacco sales, et cetera, because it's going to have major adverse impacts on health. It's going to cost us a lot more in the long run, and that's why we've got to migrate away from it. They chose not to listen to all that evidence. So we're dealing with a government that just doesn't give a toss. It's now one of the most overt governments that is in the hands of lobbyists who paid them and made donations towards them. But this is a matter of fact. Now, in any other country, a number of them would be before the courts, particularly in the United States on graft.
So can we just lock in here, because our listeners will want to know what is happening today. We had Shane being very dismissive of the Waitangi Tribunal, hugely critical, and now this is going into the High Court today regarding a call by the Tribunal to have Karen Chaw appear before them. It's to do with 7AA, and it's a challenge, really, to say that we're overlooking this demand that we seek out whānau Māori for tamariki in care. So is it as complex as I'm painting it, or is it something quite simple at play here from your read, John?
No, look, 7AA is very simple. 7AA took nearly 50 years to ensure that Māori finally got a right to start to build a system where they could engage with whakapapa and could engage with family members that had the ability, capacity to love and care for their nephews, their nieces, their grandchildren, and their own children, and to be placed in a position that middle-class white people take for granted. Now, that's not a big ask. But you know, Waipareta, I'll give you an example for Waipareta. Our uncles and that out here struggled, and aunties struggled for years to try and get care, access and custody of our own tamarikis out here, because we all know one another, right? And we also know who's going to have trouble in caring, loving and mothering and fathering their children. And as a community, we will say to the mother, unless we can do this and this, and we're going to love you and help you to do it, you're unfit for this baby at this moment, therefore auntie so-and-so will look after the baby. That's not rocket science. This is just basic tikanga. We're not allowed to do that, okay? Because non-Māori, you know, whether it's church-based, and they're no longer church-type organisations, but they're sitting behind that, et cetera, et cetera. We were locked out. Now that is just unbelievable, and thousands of our children have been buggered up because of that. And Karen Charles, another one of them. Okay, her whakapapa was never allowed near her. And a lot of our people with whakapapa feel as if their whakapapa let them down and shopped them out and fostered them out when nothing could be further than the truth. her whānau were never identified. So you don't take it out on your whakapapa when it was denied access to you, and that's what they're going to do when they take away 7AA.
Tēnā koe. Thank you. We'll talk of more issues as well around the tribunal down the track. Let's just finish up, please. I know that our MP for Tāmaki Makaurau, Tash, and also Rauri have been in Oz. Obviously, it was for Kapa as well, but it's there's many of our, so many of our people over there eligible to vote who probably don't. How important Australia to the future of Te Pāti Māori?
There's 180,000 Māori that have owned up to being there. so we know that there's a considerable number. The kapa haka is just significant. According to our judges that went over there to judge, out of the 9 ōpē that stood and took the stage, five would not disgrace the Matatini stage here amongst our top 20, 25 groups. And that says a lot about the strength of our culture in Perth, in Melbourne, in Sydney, and elsewhere. So they're organised. We've got 2 marae being built, 1 in Sydney and 1 in Melbourne, and plans for Perth. So it doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter if for instance, and I always use Ngāti Porou as an example because that's where I'm from, it doesn't matter that you don't live in the Rohe. What matters is you remain connected to your whakapapa, connected to your waiatas, connected to your whakapapa, regardless of where you live. So it doesn't matter whether you're in Gizzi or Ruatoria. What matters is you remain connected. And the same goes for any Māori that are offshore. They're still our whakapapa. They still should be loved. We should know where they are. We should care for them. When they come home, we should embrace them. And the like. And so we've now identified where our administration and organisation bases are in Australia. And honestly, the number of members to Te Pāti Māori that were registered over the last week is significant. So we're building our organisation. It doesn't matter where it sits. What matters is that it's proud to be Māori.
Tēnā koe, John. Thanks so much. John Tamere on Monday mornings, 10 past or thereabouts, with us, giving us some perspectives on social service delivery.